evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, April 25th, 2022. Fresh intercommunal violence displaced families in Darfur.
The situation in Al Janaina is tense and the main hospital is closed because health workers are not safe to carry out their duties. Some of us have been threatened, beaten and forced to treat wounded people.
And South Sudan government has declared 3 days of mourning in honor of former Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki.
We really stood with the people of South Sudan in those difficult days. So we quite remember him very well for his steadfast stand and clear stand in support of the people of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Sudan's Darfur region say at least 200 people were killed and dozens of others wounded during a renewed intercommunal clashes between Arab nomads and local farmers in Kirinik locality of West Darfur state over the weekend. Eyewitnesses in the state capital Jinena say the clashes resumed this morning. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
6 of the Sudan armed forces are reportedly killed by rapid support forces as the exchange of gunfire continues this morning. That is Dr. Adam Zakaria speaking from his hideout in Al Janaina town of West Darfur state after fleeing the hospital in the capital last evening when armed Arab nomads stormed the hospital while bringing in some of their colleagues wounded during the fighting in Krenik. Dr. Zakaria says the armed nomads killed 6 people in the hospital facility last night. He says the gunmen tried to force health workers to treat their colleagues. The hospital is shut down after health workers went running for their lives, according to Dr. Zakaria.
The situation in Al Janaina is tense and the main hospital is closed because health workers are not safe to carry out their duties. Some of us have been threatened, beaten and forced to treat wounded people.
Locals in the Krenik locality say the fighting broke out Friday following the discovery of bodies of 2 nomads on April 21st near Hashaba village, about 1 kilometer west of Krenik town. Clashes in and around Krenik town continues at this hour, according to local officials. Asadiq Muhammad, the head of the humanitarian department in West Darfur state, says a preliminary report indicates more than 200 people were killed since the fighting began in Krenik and surrounding villages. He says the death toll is likely to increase.
The 201 bodies that have been identified are counted in public places and roads, but many people have been killed inside their houses. The situation is not conducive to carry out additional counts, and definitely the number may increase.
Authorities in West Darfur state have deployed security forces in Al Janaina town and the surrounding villages. The displacement tracking matrix in Sudan, which is produced by the United Nations International Organization for Migration, estimates that between 7,500 to 12,500 households in and around Krenik town have sought refuge in a military compound within the town. Field teams confirm 201 individuals were killed and 100 have been injured as a result of the violence in Krenik. A statement issued by the Norwegian Refugee Council in Sudan calls for an end to the violence. In a statement, Will Carter, country director for the NRC in Sudan, called on all parties to immediately de-escalate and restrain from further harming civilians. Carter said safe and free passage of fleeing civilians and access for humanitarian assistance must be urgently restored. After experiencing brutal violence, the communities in West Darfur state are once again left neglected and vulnerable with no protection or accountability, said Carter, adding the entire Darfur region is quickly sinking into conflict and needs urgent attention from the international community. For months, insecurity has spread across at least three areas of West Darfur State and in the neighboring states of North and South Darfur. The World Food Program reported earlier this month that over 18 million people are likely to face acute food insecurity by September across Sudan because of the combined effects of insecurity, economic crisis, and poor harvest. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on Darfur, the Norwegian Refugee Council is calling on parties involved in the renewed violence in West Darfur to restrain from harming civilians and allow safe and free passage of civilians fleeing to access humanitarian assistance. The head of advocacy at the Norwegian Refugee Council in Sudan, Mathilde Vaux, says tens of thousands of people have been displaced from Kirinik and other towns where entire neighborhoods have been burned to the ground in what she calls a tragedy that is quickly turning into a catastrophe.
The town of Kirinik, which is a small town in West Darfur, is already a town that has seen a lot of displacement. It's already a town also that has seen attacks and violence. So, for example, back in December, there was already a major attack where a lot of families had to flee the neighborhood, flee the outskirts of the city to try and find shelter in the middle of it. Over the past few months, they came back. And sadly, Friday morning, they were attacked once again. So what we know right now is that a lot of houses were burned, a lot of neighborhoods were completely burned, and then people run into the city to try and find shelter once again. That's places like, for example, the market was completely burned down. In terms of numbers of displacement, it's very difficult to actually know the exact number because the situation is very fluid and the people keep on moving. But we believe that there is at least tens of thousands of people who are right now displaced from Kirinik to inside Kirinik or wherever they can find safety.
What factors do you think are contributing to these repeated episodes of violence in West Darfur and areas around it?
So you're right to say that these are repeated episodes of violence. These are repeated attacks. Over this past 12 to 18 months, I believe, there was really regular attacks on civilians, regular burning of villages or houses, or even attacks in town. What we see is that the roots of conflict have not been addressed for the past years. The past decades, right? Disputes over land, disputes over resources like water, for example. And that also, there's no security, there's no justice for these violence to actually tone down, right? What is dramatic is that at the end of 2020, the UNAMID force, which is the Blue Helmet, left the country, withdrawn from the country as per the mandate by the UN Security Council. And then in 2021, we saw the highest number of people being displaced by conflict. Today, no protection of civilians. If you live in Darfur at the moment, especially if you have been displaced once, you're most likely to be displaced once again very soon.
This renewed fighting is aggravating an already massive problem of displacement in the area from last year and early this year. Like, families being displaced now are fleeing into the capital city of West Darfur, Janina, which already hosts around 100,000 displaced people. What are the needs of these displaced people in West Darfur, but also around it, North sure. Darfur, South Darfur?
Yeah. All right. I'm going to perhaps focus on West Darfur, but it's most likely exactly the same in the other states. The need, it's everything. They need everything. They've lost everything that they had. And if they had still something, it was burned down not a very long time ago, 3 days ago. So they need shelter. They barely have access to water. They have, because of insecurity, they have no way to actually work. So a lot of them, for example, are farmers, but insecurity has prevented them to go to their farmland, right? And we're coming at the harvest season very soon, and very unlikely that a lot of them will be able to actually go and farm and get the food from, and get the fruit from the farming. So at the moment, it's really name a need, and they have it. Health, education, obviously, as well. But I would say something that is the most dire and immediate at the moment is that they need protection.
That was Mathilde Wolf, the head of advocacy at the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking from Khartoum with my colleague Nabil Biagio here in Washington. Today is World Malaria Day, and the World Health Organization is recommending the expanded use of the first malaria vaccine, calling it a potential game changer in the fight against malaria. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Malaria is a preventable, treatable disease. Yet every year, malaria sickens more than 200 million people and kills more than 600,000. Most of these deaths, nearly 500,000, are among young children in Africa. That means every 60 seconds, a child dies of malaria. Despite this bleak news, the outlook for malaria control is promising, thanks to the development of the world's first malaria vaccine. The World Health Organization calls the achievement a historic breakthrough for science. A pilot program was started in 2019 in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. Since then, the World Health Organization reports more than 1 million children in the three countries have received the malaria vaccine. Mary Hamill is head of WHO's Malaria Vaccine Implementation Program. She says the 2-year pilot program has shown the vaccine is safe, feasible to deliver, and reduced as deadly severe malaria.
We saw a 30% drop in children being brought to the hospitals with deadly severe malaria. And we also saw almost a 10% reduction in all-cause child mortality. If the vaccine is widely deployed, it's estimated that it could save an additional 40 to 80,000 child lives each year.
WHO reports Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, will provide more than $155 million to support expanded introduction of the malaria vaccine for Gavi-eligible countries in sub-Saharan Africa. The vaccine against malaria was under development before the COVID-19 vaccine was produced. Hamill says WHO has learned a lot of lessons from that effort, which could be used in the development of future malaria vaccines.
You know, there have been new platforms that came forward with the COVID vaccine, including the mRNA platform. And now the developers of one of the mRNA vaccines is looking forward to developing a malaria vaccine using that same platform.
Last July, BioNTech, manufacturer of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, announced it wants to build on that success by developing a malaria vaccine using mRNA technology. The pharmaceutical company says it aims to start clinical trials by the end of this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, President Salva Kiir declares 3 days of mourning in honor of former Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki, who died on Friday. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who comes first in your life?
My sister comes first because she was the one who raised me. She taught me how to do everything, so she'll come first.
Definitely God, but I think when talking about people, I think my family and my friends, just people who I've, you know, surrounded myself with.
I think the woman that I love. Every moment I think about her, every moment I wish I'm around her, because she makes me happy. She gives me a lot of peace. She has a way of helping me to just relax and calm down.
My mom comes first in my life because she has really done a whole lot for me, and if there's anything, I would really want to do something to honor her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The UN mission in South Sudan says at least 72 civilians were killed and 64 women and girls raped between February and April in Lare County of Unity State. UNMISS is condemning what it says was widespread sexual violence, killing, including beheading, burning alive of civilians, and attacks on humanitarians in Lare County. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
In a statement released today, the Special Representative of the Secretary General for South Sudan, Nicholas Asom, said human rights violations were documented during a surge in violence that was carried out by armed youth from Koch and Mayendit counties. Local residents and officials say armed groups loyal to the SPLA-IO faction run by Simon Gadwich and forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar killed more than 40 people, burnt villages and looted humanitarian warehouses in recent weeks. UNMISS spokesperson Linda Tom says 72 civilians were killed, at least 11 were injured, and 64 cases of sexual violence were recorded by the UNMISS human rights teams between February 17th and April 7th.
We're extremely concerned about the situation in Lare, and we strongly condemn the widespread sexual violence, killing including beheadings, burning alive of civilians, and attacks on humanitarians.
Home says UNMISS teams conducted 10 verification missions in which two survivors said they were repeatedly gang-raped after they had come out of hiding to find food for their children. She says a lactating mother recounted that she was raped and severely beaten for 3 days. Asom said he is appalled by what he called horrific attacks on civilians in Lare. He urged local and national South Sudanese authorities to take immediate measures to reduce tensions and prevent further escalations and retaliatory attacks, saying impunity on violations of human rights must end. South Sudan Minister of Information and Government spokesman Michael McQuay calls the UNMISS report premature and unfair, saying the committee, which was recently formed by President Kiir, has yet to present their findings.
These are people who are putting the cart before the horse, because the issue is to be investigated, and after investigation we will reach conclusion. But if people just rely on what they have seen in the social media and start commenting and doing so forth, that is not true. We need to investigate first, and after which we will decide. This is a premature commentary, which I don't think is fair. There are people who claim to be human rights activists, and they are not competent to report on their own.
Lam Paul Gavriel, a spokesperson of the SPLA-IO, denies participation of SPLA-IO forces in human rights violations in Lare County. He says those responsible for the killings of civilians in Lare should be held accountable.
What happened in Lare is very bad. It's not really something advisable that is supposed to happen to a particular community, but we all know that this is intercommunal violence that came from two countries against one county. So it has got nothing to do with the SPLA-IO in it. We know that there are presence of SPLA-IO on the ground and also SSPDF on the ground, but the attack in Lare exactly, it has got tribal link to it or communal link to it. So those people who are responsible for this youth, they need to be questioned and they need to be answerable for what they used in Lare County.
UNMISS Chief Asom said victims and survivors must get the justice they deserve. Authorities said some 40,000 people fled the violence in Lare, with several thousand reportedly crossing the Nile to Fangak in Jonglei State. Thousands of cattle were raided and many homes and humanitarian facilities were looted and burnt down. With the wet season underway and the increasing risk of floods, thousands of internally displaced families are facing dangerous conditions. Authorities say recent violence in Mayendit and Koch counties is also being investigated. ONMIS says it welcomes initial steps taken in the formation of an investigative committee and the deployment of SSPDF to restore security. But Tom says ONMIS has deployed additional peacekeepers to conduct regular patrols, including night patrols in Lair Town, to prevent further loss of life.
Peacekeepers are also providing protection to internally displaced people and humanitarians who are responding to the needs of survivors. In addition to that, the mission is also engaging with leadership at the capital and state level to mitigate violence, and we also have civil affairs teams that are meeting with communities to conduct focus group discussions in conflict-affected areas.
The fighting that began in February in Mirmir Payam of Unity State quickly spread to several villages in Koch, Mayandit, and Lair counties. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir declared 3 days of mourning and ordered South Sudan flag be flown at half-mast across the country in honor of former Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki, who died on Friday. Some South Sudanese who lived in Kenya during the 21 year of fighting in the country are expressing sadness over the death of Mwai Kibaki, who they say played a major role during South Sudan's struggle for independence. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
In his condolence message, President Kiir said the late Kibaki was a man who deployed a practical approach to politics in order to keep the torch of accountability burning in Kenyan institution. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe says Kibaki will be remembered for his strong support to the people of South Sudan during difficult times.
Well, without him, we would have not made it, and he really stood with the people of South Sudan in those difficult days. So we quite remember him very well for his steadfast stand and clear stand in support of the people of South Sudan. Our condolences goes to the people of Kenya, the government, and the people of Kenya. The president, His Excellency, the president had issued to send a condolence message and has directed that the flag in South Sudan should be running at half-mast.
Under his administration, Kenya adopted a more decentralized political system and limited presidential power, said Kiir. Juba resident Tong Deng says Kibaki was an instrumental figure during Sudan's peace process, which resulted in the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement between the Sudan government and the SPLM in 2005. Deng says before Kibaki became president, southern Sudanese refugees living in Kenya were repeatedly harassed and detained by the police for not processing documents permitting them to reside in the country.
I don't want harassment of the foreigners. He did not make it just for South Sudanese only, but he said, I don't want any harassment of the foreigners. Any foreigner that is coming to the country should be stopped at the border, but not to be harassed inside the country. If person has entered the country, then the problem will be the migration who allowed that person to come to the country, but not a foreigner. So from that, immediately on the 30th December, when she made that speech, the police harassment is stopped right away. It ceased right away.
Deng says Kibaki's economic policies have positioned Kenya on the path of sustainable development. South Sudanese Agok Mayak Riak says Kibaki made tremendous changes in Kenya, especially for South Sudanese refugees living in Kakuma.
Used to commute from Kakuma, the refugee camp, to Nairobi, really found a breathing space, even within Nairobi itself. So it was such a tremendous effort by the president then to crack down on corruption, especially by the police.
William Aite, another South Sudanese who lived in Kenya during Kibaki's administration, says even though the former president had battled illness for years, his death shocked many South Sudanese. Aite says Kibaki's death is a big loss to all South Sudanese.
We know what true leadership is about. You know, they call him a gentle politician, a gentleman in politics, right? So for South Sudanese who have lived in Kenya, and they have come back home and all that stuff with all the challenges that they're facing right now, there might be some challenges, but it is quite shocking and it's a sad one for each and every one of them.
Kibaki served as the fourth vice president of Kenya for 10 years from 1978 to 1988 under President Daniel Arap Moi. He was Kenyan third president from December 2002 until April 2013. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The Horn of Africa is suffering a historic drought that the UN says could result into starvation for as many as 20 million people. In Ethiopia, more than 7 million people are experiencing food shortages, suffering compounded by war in the north. Henry Wilkins reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
A fourth consecutive year of failed rains is causing the worst drought in the Horn of Africa since 1981. Meanwhile, the UN's World Food Programme tells VOA a combination of conflict in the north of Ethiopia and drought in the south are set to be catastrophic for the country. WFP spokesperson Claire Neville says the worst effects could be averted if action is taken quickly, but that doesn't look likely.
In the 2016 to 2017 drought, this catastrophe was avoided through early action. In 2022, due to a severe lack of resourcing, there are growing fears that it won't be possible to prevent the looming disaster.
A policy advisor for a major humanitarian donor to Ethiopia, who declined to be named, told VOA that the government's focus was on the war and mobilisation for it, so there was significant lag time in doing the assessments and putting in place the response mechanisms for the drought in the south. The advisor said the cost of that inattention was a huge loss of livelihoods, assets and livestock. The advisor noted, however, that the regional and central governments have recently tried to pull together resources and are trying to address the needs in regions of the country like Somali and Oromia, particularly by rallying donors like the WFP. Aid agencies in Africa have also complained the crisis in Ukraine is drawing attention and money away from countries on the African continent. The policy advisor added the damage caused by the delayed response is irreversible and it could take years, if it happens at all, for those affected to recover. Aside from drawing attention from the drought, Ethiopia's civil war has itself been a major cause of humanitarian crises. In March, the government said it had called a humanitarian ceasefire and would allow aid into the northern region of Tigray, where it is fighting separatist forces. William Davison is a senior analyst covering Ethiopia for the International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research group.
Currently, despite the humanitarian truce, there still seems to be around one convoy of aid reaching Tigray per week. So that is nothing like the unrestricted access for humanitarian agencies that's needed. And we should also note that there has been no move by the federal government yet to restore vital public services to Tigray, including banking, telecoms, and electricity.
The number of people in need of humanitarian assistance in the north, combined with those likely to be affected by the drought in the south, brings the total to almost 12.5 million Ethiopians in need of help, according to UN figures. The National Disaster Risk Management Commission of Ethiopia, a branch of the Ethiopian government, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with the Saka number one and the song Wedding Day.
Tanina debe amolozede, be alabuzede. Tanina debe alabuzede. It is a wedding day.
Wedding day.
Day is tanina tajunubin. Be amolozede. It is a wedding day.
Wedding day.
Day is tanina tajunubin. Be amolozede. In a wedding day, usana kila zimbi kon kon fadi. In a wedding day, lazim kende arfu galita farhan. In a wedding day, mama lazim kaman bi kon kon fogo. In a wedding day, baba kaman bi kon kon fogo. Bonga. In a wedding day.
We have been listening to Isaka Number 1 and the song Wedding Day. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
It is a wedding day.
Wedding day.
Day is an inata junubin. We are morosete.
Number one on the beat. Number one on the beat.
Be a morosete. Tanina de be a morosete. Be a la buzete. Tanina de be a la buzete.